I would like to say, last year I kind of went through the whole litany of names of all the people in our personnel department. It's not that I care about them less. It's just that there's a lot of guys to name. But know this, is a collective effort on the part of our organization in the draft process, as it is in all the personnel business that we do throughout the year. And I very much appreciate all the hard work that these guys have put into this. To answer the question, yes, we do miss Reggie McKenzie and John Schneider and John Dorsey, but they're doing their own thing now and doing it well, and we have good people to stand in their place. So having said that, I'm open up to questions. No, you kind of adjust specific responsibilities as you go along, but there are certain, you know, items that you have to do, and when you go through it in a room with 20 or 25 people, there has to be some order and progression, and everybody's got knows where they're supposed to step in, and if we're looking for a hand measurement or a 40 time or something, we know exactly who's in charge of that, and they get that out so that there's no delay in our process.
Ted, is there someone in the process this year that can say to you maybe things that you don't necessarily want to hear? Because these guys were with you for so long, they knew you so well, you trusted their judgment, mm-hmm. but you haven't gone through it without them for a while. So in other words, are you curious to see who steps up and maybe is your alter ego in this process?
No. That's a good question. It's pretty sharp, you know. That. Yeah, we've always had that, and we always will. And those people that we put in those positions are mandated to question and to challenge from time to time, not for the sake of an argument, but to make sure we're doing what's right for the organization. And, yeah, those three guys did that a lot. We have other people here that are doing that as we speak. Like, we'll have our meeting with our defensive coaches this afternoon. We met with our offensive coaches all afternoon yesterday, and the coaches have their say, the other guys have their say, and then, you know, the people that ask the tough questions do their stuff. So it's good. Sometimes it's uncomfortable, but it's good.
Ted, you've been talking with John Dorsey at all leading up to his first draft. And what is kind of your thoughts on seeing those guys, you know, going kind of take your mandate and now kind of adapt it to their own style drafting guys?
Yeah, I speak to John fairly often, on the weekends especially, because he knows our schedule. So he knows exactly when we'll be ordering Subway sandwiches for lunch and that sort of thing. And John Schneider and Reggie McKenzie, those guys, they're good people. And they're in the same position I am, whereas, you know, you're fussing over what you're going to do and thinking of a million different scenarios that could happen and hoping you get it right, because we all care about the places we're working at.
Ted, one of your best draft moves, I think you would agree, was taking Clay Matthews in 09. I think you traded three picks to move up to get him. How much risk is there when you trade up? Because you did it three times last year as well. Do you consider it a risky move? Because if you miss on the guy, then you lose, you know, more than one pick. How do you view that?
Yeah, it's sort of the risk-reward ratio that you work with at any time during the draft. Do we take this guy now, or do we take a chance on him being there a little bit later? Or do you take this guy now that's really talented but maybe a knucklehead? You know, you're weighing that risk-reward. So it's all a matter of that, you know. And you never know how it's going to work. But that was something we felt was important and worthy at the time.
What did you see in Clay at that time that made you so certain that he was going to turn out the way he did?
Well, as an organization, we liked him, and we liked the things that he would bring to our defense. You know, he He played that position in college. Well, I know he wasn't a starter up until his senior year, but there was, you know, when you watched his senior tape, it was good stuff. So that was a pretty easy thing compared to a lot of things we do.
So when you look back at last year's draft and you did trade up three times, when you do that, because that's not something that happens a lot with you, it's not possible but not often, what's the reasoning behind trading up?
I think it's when you think you see value. And that's the reason sometimes we'll go backwards when we see value later in the draft or numbers at positions where we think there's value. And it's a trade-off. You know, you know that you're giving up something if you trade up, and you know that you're giving up something in terms of an opportunity to maybe take a particular player if you go backwards.
Ideally, would you rather be going backwards, though? I mean, if you had your druthers, how many picks would you like to be able to have each year so you kind of have a good number to work with?
Well, I think, you know, it's like Ron always said, it's kind of like, baseball, you're not going to get a hit every time you go to the plate, but if you have more swings, you have a better chance of getting a hit. So I think in general philosophy, I'd rather have more than less, yes. But at the end of the day, I'd rather have more quality than anything. But quality and quantity both is a nice thing.
I know you're not a fan of mock drafts and everything else, but also, so many of them seem to be need-based. Do you completely separate your existing roster from the draft board when looking at players and best player available, that kind of thing? Or do you contemplate this is a good fit because of what's on your 53 or 80 right now?
We try not to. We certainly have those conversations in terms of how does a particular player fit in our scheme or whether it be offense, defense, special teams, whatever. But at the end of the day, I do separate it. When we make that call and draft that player, we're trying our best to draft the best player.
How much of a role did your coaches have in all of this? I know obviously this, you and the scouts have been at this for months and months and months before those guys jump in.
Right. Well, they've been at it since prior to the combine. Watching tape on selected players that our personnel guys give them and that sort of thing. They have other responsibilities to go along. They can't spend all their time on the personnel, but they do really good work. And it's interesting to see it from a different set of eyes, from a different perspective, because coaches look at things a little bit differently than scouts look at things.
Would you let a coach overrule you? Say I just, you know, coach, you know, I don't like this guy. Would you kind of acquiesce to what the coach does if he just flat out doesn't like the guy?
Well, I won't get
into. Or do you guys eventually reach a consensus by the time 25th rolls around?
Yeah, well, it's not a democracy. We don't vote. We have discussions, and everybody's opinions are heard. And there are people in our personnel department that might think we should do one thing, and somebody might think another, or a coach might think this and or that. At the end of the day, it's ultimately my call, and we try to take the best player. And I'm not saying that to say I'm some sort of almighty decision maker. It's just that's my job, and my responsibility.
Ted, the amount of injuries you guys did have last year, does that increase the importance of finding depth in the draft, you know, wherever that might be?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Just as far as the amount of injuries that you guys had last year, does that increase kind of the urgency or importance of finding depth in the draft?
Well, I don't know that it's any more, or, you know, yeah, we had a lot of injuries, but if we hadn't had a lot of injuries, we'd be looking for depth and quality and young guys to join our team.
Ted, kind of along with that, because of what you've suffered here in two of the last 3 years in terms of injuries, does that change the way you evaluate guys coming out who have had injury concerns in their college careers?
We do our best, and the medical examinations, and we actually have a grade on players like all the other teams do. That's nothing secret. you weigh that in terms of the draft. But oftentimes a player's injury history has very little to do with his the net result durability of his pro career. You can have guys that have never been in the training room and they get to a training camp and get hurt in a preseason game and who knows? Injuries are injuries and that's part of the business in the NFL. But yes, to answer your question, I'm sorry to be so long about it, but we factor in durability issues, yes.
Ted, you mentioned the responsibility in making a final call. When you take the approach that you do as a team, the philosophy of draft and develop, how do you view the draft? I mean, it seems to me that it's the absolute lifeblood of your team. How much pressure is there? How important is it for you to be right as much as you possibly can?
Well, I think it's important. We've always said we've never swayed away from this, that we believe in draft and developing players. We think that is the best way to build your team over the long term. It doesn't mean we won't sign free agents or do different ways of acquiring players and going to college free agency and that sort of thing. But we do believe that, you know, continually every year you need a new class of players and young men to join your team in order to sustain over the long term the ability to win and compete in the NFL.
So does that put more pressure on you to not be wrong?
Pressure's what you make it. I'm a single guy, you know, I don't have children to worry about. It's not that much pressure. But you want to do right. I mean, I'm not trying to make light of this. It's important. And we gnash our teeth over and make sure we try to do the best we can to make the right decisions. But at the end of the day, we don't worry about things and we don't fuss over, you know, whatever.
And do your player grades fluctuate much from all the game video you watch through the fall and winter to the combine to the pro day? Is there much fluctuation?
There is. As we go along, we have our meetings prior to the combine and we kind of set the board initially. We come back from the combine and we move guys all around. We go to the pro days and we move guys around again. We come back in and we wind up moving guys back to where they were when we first watched them in January. It doesn't happen in all cases, but it's shocking how much that works out. At the end of the day, and that's what our mantra is, to know what we know. If we don't know something, admit we don't know it. And there's going to be this gap of information that we don't know about this player. But what we do know, that's what we're going to trade on.
How influential is the combine? Are those pro days, all these workouts before the draft, to you guys?
I think they're important. There are people that certainly test better. And I think, quote, unquote, improve their stock through the pro days in Indianapolis. And there are other times when guys don't test very well and it might lower their value. At the end of the day, does it decide who can play in the NFL? No, it doesn't. But, you like to see numbers and statistics athletically that equate to guys that have done it and done it on a high level in the NFL. And so that's what you're looking for and all that.
Ted, you signed Clay Matthews yesterday long-term contract. It's expected you'll probably sign Aaron Rodgers somewhere down the road here. You're going to sink a lot of money into two players. Does that at all handcuff you to have so much money invested in two players? Does that handcuff you in terms of building the roster around them, not just this year, but in years to come?
Right. Rarely, if ever, do I speak of money. But in a general sense, I will say this. We are, we understand the restraints and the requirements of the salary cap. We understand, we think how to build a team to go forward. And other than that, I really wouldn't have a comment.
Ted, is there a danger in staring at that board for too long before Thursday? In other words, do you like guys to get away and make sure they're fresh and maybe have a 24-hour blackout period before the draft starts? Yeah. We'll approach that.
Yeah, we'll put this thing to bed pretty soon. In fact, maybe a little bit sooner than normal. And then start working on the other aspects, you know, just contacting other teams and making sure they know where our telephone numbers are and all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, after at some point, you have to kind of put it to bed because you got to trust the work that you've done and live with it the way it is. And you don't know how the draft's going to go when you're picking as late as we are. I mean, everybody focuses on the first round. You guys know that I'm just as keen on all the other rounds, but you don't know how it's going to go. So you don't want to gnash your teeth over that first pick too much. You know, you just do what you do.
So would you say by Wednesday you're no longer looking at that board and staring at it? Is that, would you have it set by?
Oh, yeah, I would say sure. Monday. Sure. I don't know about Monday.
Tuesday.
Yeah. I'll say that sometimes, and then all of our scouts go to their different places in their offices, and all of a sudden I go back to the draft room, and then they were telling me the other day I need like a bell outside the thing so it rings every time I go back in there so they'll know when I'm back in there.
Ted, you like to make light of the fact that you're not going to tell us much and stuff like that. Have you?
I've told too much today.
Have you seen examples of, or have either one, maybe Ron said more than Ron wished he had and you felt like teams knew who you were going to pick, or on the flip side, you guys are in the room and you read all the clips and everything and you have a pretty good idea of who other teams are going to pick because maybe they're not as close to the best as you are?
No, I think it's all guesswork. I think if there are, I think, teams that are sophisticated enough to be able to lay traps for you and drop a dime on somebody somewhere and all of a sudden it says the Baltimore Ravens and Ozzie Newsome are going to do this, you know. Well, odds are it's probably not, but then you start thinking, well, maybe it's a double deal here. So he's wanting you to think that he's trying to get you, but he really is going to. But you can't believe anything you hear.
So
these mock drafts, bless their heart, you know, as much work as people do on them, you know, I think it's, you know, they do a good job of evaluating players and deciding where they can slot them, but I don't think it affects a particular team in terms of how they rate or value players as they're getting ready to draft.
But you're not interested in laying those traps yourself for other teams?
I'm not smart enough to do that. You got to be pretty sharp to be a double spy.
Ted, you joked about it, but have you ever said too much and later on said, oh, I regret that or whatever? Because it seems like you're a pretty good poker player.
I'm sure I have. But I probably didn't do it intentionally. I'm sure I've talked too much from time to time.
Ted, Cedric Benson yesterday sent out a video of him working out. He looked, you know, to the naked eye pretty healthy and with his foot. Is he still on the radar? How would you assess where his chances are returning?
Yeah, I wouldn't comment other. You know, he's an unrestricted free agent, and we had the injury thing we got to get past, but we'll see.
Did you have an update for us on Johnny John?
No, nothing to report there.
Two more. Ted, if you don't get the safety you want or a safety in the draft, can you rule out bringing back Charles Woodson?
Oh, I wouldn't care to speculate on things like that.
But going back to the draft board a little bit, you know, you said about the combine and the pro days and everything. Does that make your area scouts, being an old scout yourself, does that make the work that your area scouts do and the visits you take in the fall and the film study far and away the most important stuff that you guys do in preparation for the draft?
What, you mean going to school and...
Well, yeah, just the football aspect. You said, you know, you mentioned how some guys test well and stuff like that.
Right.
Is that really, that's where...
Well, I think the study of the game tape and being able to watch them practice and see how they look in a uniform and move around in person, I think that's more valuable than going to the... to a pro day or to the Indianapolis Combine and watching people run around. It doesn't mean that we don't try to gain some knowledge from that process of the pro day and the Indianapolis Combine, but I think I think the closer you get to the draft, the more you go back to the football thing, because that's home.
And realistically, as you stand there now, and I'm not asking you to tell us, but do you have a pretty good idea of who's going to be at 26 and you're going to have to choose from, or do you really not feel like you have a great idea of who's going to be there available?
I don't know that yet. I'm not going to know that. I used to be a little, probably when I first came back here in 2005, I was a little cockier about, yeah, I know what's going to happen and all that. As you get older, you start to lose that edge, I think, a little bit. Or you fool yourself into so much that you realize you're making mistakes and you didn't know. But so I try not to predict. I try just to make sure that if this guy's on our board in a position to pick, that if he's there, we'll consider picking him.